Today's program has been brought to you by Hearst Ranch, the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. For more information, visit HearstRanch.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
Good afternoon, friends. It's 5 o'clock and it's Wednesday. And if it's 5 o'clock and it's Wednesday and you're listening to the Heritage Radio Network, you're listening to me, Phil Colicchio. I am the host of The Business of the Business, the radio program here on the Heritage Radio Network that explores the business side of the hospitality industry. Sometimes we talk to restaurateurs. Sometimes we talk to chefs. Sometimes we talk to teachers. And most of the time, though, we're talking to entrepreneurs. And entrepreneurs come in all shapes and sizes, as you'll hear about today. If you miss this broadcast ever, very rarely does anyone miss it. I know that it's on the hit parade for most of the people out there. But if you do miss it, you can go to www.heritageradionetwork.org to our archive and click onto the Business of the Business icon. And you can hear about 25 different interviews that we've done, or you can find us as a podcast on iTunes. So I want to get down to business. I have a guy with me today that recently stepped down from being chairman of the board of General Motors. That's a lie. He did not. He did not step down from the chairmanship of General Motors. We were teasing about the food industry, the food business, before we got on, and he said, "Hey, it's not like I run a $100 billion company. I just work like I do." Today, my guest is the one and only Patrick Martins. Good afternoon, Patrick.
Hey, thanks so much for having me, Phil.
Oh, listen, it's an absolute pleasure.
I love your show.
Well, that's great. That makes two of us. I enjoy doing it because I get to meet people like you, people in the industry in which I work, an industry that I respect, who really take our knowledge and challenge it. You know, we had a little bit of a very brief chat before we sat down. Patrick and I both share a sense that too much of the hospitality industry and the food industry is not seriously contemplated by the press, the media that covers it. It's very style conscious. It's somewhat lacking in substance. I think that disrespects the industry in many ways because I think that it takes away the power that the food industry has. Mm-hmm. And speaking of power, Patrick is a powerhouse. What he has done in the last 15 years is nothing short of amazing. In the year 2000, Patrick founded Slow Food USA, which was a, an effort that came from the heart. The idea was to try to impress upon people in the restaurant industry and also in the general public that ethically raised product was really an important way to look at what they were buying, what they were eating. That morphed into Heritage Foods because I think he saw a real gap in the market for. Well-raised, let's just call a spade a spade. Well-raised pigs at first, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Right? And he turned that into a business. He also founded this radio station and allowed it to become a 501c3 charitable organization. Those three things, to me, that's enough to put on a tombstone. Are you done?
Well, I don't know. Has anyone asked to make my tombstone already? I would be very worried if Anne was making my coffee in the morning and also already commissioning a tombstone.
No, it was meant as a compliment. I should have said that's a Hall of Fame plaque.
Nice. Right, no. It's true. I mean, I'm very honored, and certainly, yeah, the people I've worked with have been, you know, fantastic. Most recently here at the station, Aaron Fairbanks, the executive director, and Jack Inslee, who, you know, has been here since day one almost. And, you know, they're the ones who really make it possible day to day.
Well, the radio station is interesting. But before we get to that, so it's that sort of old jazz thing. Mm-hmm. So how does a nice kid like you...
A nice Jewish kid getting the pork business?
Getting the pork business. Well, let's start out. I mean, slow food, a lot of people who pay attention to the food industry, especially in the Northeast, know who you are because you're out there. You're a guy who says what's on his mind. You write op-eds for the New York Times. You're not afraid to sit for interviews, and you're not afraid to say what's on your mind about how the business of this business operates. But before 2000, what were you doing that got you to the point of saying, I'm going to start a movement that's also a business?
Well, it was really, you know, I always admired Carlo Petrini. He was the reason I went to Italy. He's the founder of Slow Food. He was a revolutionary from day one. I mean, he organized a large folk festival in Italy. He organized the second ever independent radio station in all of Italy. Back in the day, yep, when the Italian government tried to, squelch any dissenting voices, they made the argument that the radio dial could only hold three state stations, which, of course, is ridiculous because you can put a million stations on a radio dial.
Well, leave it to the Italian government.
To figure it out, yeah, where bureaucracy meets anarchy. And they figured it out, how to broadcast and, co-opt the radio waves. And that was the inspiration. His Radio Bra Red Waves, it was called. It was the inspiration for the Heritage Radio Network. And, you know, he's the one that got me into it. My only real connection to food before that is I had gone to graduate school at NYU, and I wrote a paper on medieval food traditions. So not really enough to merit, you know, getting into the business.
Yeah.
It was really being around Carlo and hearing his great ideas and seeing how he dealt with people and how he cut through politics to get what he felt needed to be done.
How did you get to Carlo?
He just made it was, you know, a coincidental thing. We were at Remy Restaurant, Francesco Antonucci's one-block-long restaurant designed by Adam Tiani. Yeah. It was, I think, between 53rd and 54th, between 6th and 7th.
Days of Excess.
Right? Exactly, yeah. Days of Excess. And Carlo was at a dinner, and we met, and he said, meet me at the Carlisle in the lobby the next day, and I want to talk to you. And I had just finished writing about medieval food traditions, so I had next to zero job prospects, of course, after a weird thesis like that. And he invited me to come out. And at the time, they didn't really have any foreign people working there. So I was like a minor celebrity, you know, and, oh, there's an American now that works with Carlo. And I got to be around him for a full year, practically dusk to dusk in the same room. And when I got back to the States, that rubbed off on me.
Wow.
I'm certainly no Carlo at all in terms of ideas or charisma, but just the rub off was already enough to come to the States and start stuff.
Well, that is an extraordinary piece of serendipity, isn't it?
Yeah, very lucky. Right place at the right time, as I'll so say. Many stories are.
So then, how do you turn Slow Food USA, mm-hmm. which really is sort of a consciousness movement.
A nonprofit.
Right, but how do you turn it into a business?
Well,
you got a nonprofit, you got to pay people, you got to pay rent,
yeah.
You know, you got to pay the electric bill. They still shut off the electric for nonprofits.
They still do.
Yeah, but how did you make that into a business? Did you watch Carlo and see how he did it?
Yes, he was always a very smart math guy, you know, to figure out simple business. Well, he always said all great ideas are destroyed by committees. So, of course, in Italy, you know, Mussolini and then, like I say, anarchy, you know, in a way, they're all a bunch of you know, monarchs. I mean, so Carlo could really do whatever he
wanted. Yeah, I mean, it's an entrepreneurial society over there in many ways.
In many ways. And so he was one. I mean, he pushed through this. I mean, he realized that we just didn't, that Italy was losing a respect for all of its traditions. And so he's like, damn it, I want to do a 100,000 person event. And I want that to be the premier food event in all the world. And I want to win the Nobel Prize for my food work. And he could make that happen.
Wow.
Here in the States, it's the opposite. It's also to merit nonprofit status, exemption from taxes. You need boards.
Yes.
Advisory boards.
Yes.
Then as I started Slow Food, all these chapter leaders were like, I have a 300-member chapter in Portland, Oregon. I raise all this money for the national organization. Where is my voice? So we created committees. And that was the infrastructure that allowed Slow Food to continue to this day. And it's being the new executive director is this guy named Richard McCarthy, who used to run a farmer's market in New Orleans. He's a great guy.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the structure that allowed it to exist, hopefully, forever. But, of course, for the founder who started the thing, there was a lot less freedom to move around.
Right.
But at first, there was a lot of freedom. And so I did things like launched a restaurant guide series in New York, Chicago, and San Fran. I also took a project, the best project of Slow Food, the Slow Food Arc of Taste, which is a metaphorical arc onto which they boarded endangered foods.
Right.
And I took one of those products, the turkey, and I actually said, all Slow Food members who want to spend $180 will get the best, oldest breed turkey in America delivered to their door the day before Thanksgiving.
You know what?
And that was the birth of the business.
And there you go. And I happen to be a fan of the Heritage Turkey. And I've been fortunate enough to work with a lot of chefs. I listen sometimes when they're talking to their colleagues. And I heard them talking about the turkey once. And I'm lucky enough to live in Princeton, New Jersey. So I've been to the Griggstown Farm, Quail Farm, many times, watched them raise their turkeys, have actually stayed for a slaughter because I really wanted to see how it went from soup to nuts. I saw the birds, I saw them arrive, and I saw them depart, you know, and it was an incredible education process. I guess really what it does, it allowed me, I know it's a word that you use in your writing, traceability.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it allowed me to actually see that process and also see that these birds were raised in a very ethical manner, very well cared for, and
most importantly, they came from specific old school genetics.
Right.
And, you know, people look at how an animal is raised in these confinement operations and they're shocked. And that is sad to see them overcrowded by these big farms. But before they even get to the age where they are overcrowded, in a weird way, the industrial complex started not to breed for qualities. They would actually breed the most deformed animals in their flock.
With
and
the
deformity, right. It was the white breast.
Exactly.
Fast growth.
Right.
You know, even lack of intelligence. So they were kind of, it was like the island of Dr. Moreau. They were very good at what they did, but technically, you know, they corrupted what had once been a very strong, healthy genetic animal to the point where they looked around all of a sudden when Slow Food came in and was like, oh my God, 98% of the entire meats in this country are these ones that were overbred for these specific traits with the business behind it, not so much the ethics or the taste.
Yeah.
And by the way, it's also bad business.
It's a completely about business. And, and I mean, I don't, for you know, there's no process, at least in our country, I don't think, that is not continually being analyzed and modified for efficiency.
Right.
All right? And you know, look, I've read the books. I've read Eating Animals. Mm-hmm. I've read The Righteous Pork Chop. I've read all the books that want to shock me.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess maybe I'm just too jaded to be shocked. But rather, I look at it and I say, you know, there were some good thoughts that went haywire.
Yeah, just,
you know,
greed
from the industry
seeped in just enough. Because I mean, when a chicken used to take, you know, 12 weeks, and now it takes 3.
Right.
that's too much.
Right.
And by the way, I mean, the whole use of subtherapeutic antibiotics, which is low-grade antibiotics pumped into every turkey and chicken practically raised in this country all the time, it's weird. It's like it and presumes they're sick.
You only need that when you have an overcrowded situation.
Exactly.
That's the
and
only
when
time
you're
you
unhealthy genetics. Right. You're growing too fast for your cardiovascular system to grow with it. That's why I say you're already in pain because of the genetics. It's almost, you have to look back to the Nazis or something. It's a very dire thing. And by the way, I've written a book called The Carnivore's Manifesto with the host on the radio station here, Mike Edison. He is the Mike and Judy show. And it's very, very fun. And while it does talk about some of the dire things, there's also an amazing entrepreneurial power in the small farms around the country. I mean, we
very
talk about
so.
The bad, but there's a lot of hope, okay. too.
No, very, very, very much so. My guest today is Patrick Martins, the founder of Slow Foods USA, the founder of Heritage Food USA, and the founder of Heritage Radio Network. He's the only guest so far I've had in a year who has mentioned the Nazis.
Sorry. I failed that. That's why I told you about the book. I just wanted to say,
no,
I can
the Nazis,
be fun,
I was going
to
say, the Nazis and Benito Mussolini in the same day. So I think there's one Axis power missing. We'll talk about Japan when we come back from a little break. How's
and
that?
Is Fidel going to call in?
No, but we are here on an auspicious day. We've had a military coup in Egypt today.
Oh, wow.
And where Americans have to figure out whether or not deposing a Muslim leader who instituted a Muslim constitution through military authority is a good thing. We'll consider that during our break, Patrick. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit lighter subject than military coups. Not at all. I think it's an interesting time to be alive. Phil Colicchio here on The Business of the Business, heritageradionetwork.org. We'll be back after a short break.
Ranch grass-fed beef, pasture raised on 150,000 acres in Central California. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, free-range, sustainably produced, humane. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, the authentic flavor of the American West.
We're back here on The Business of the Business at the heritageradionetwork.org. Those were the Punch Brothers bringing us out of our break, Movement and Location, from the Who's Feeling Young Now album. It was very kind of the Punch Brothers to allow me to use that that music, and I thank them, and I thank None Such Records for allowing us to use it without paying them a royalty. So, you know, in the music industry, Patrick, you can't get by anymore without live performance, because selling records ain't what it used to be. Mm-hmm. You just can't do it. You also can't operate a not-for-profit without generating revenue and without managing expenses. Heritage Foods, I guess, I'm guessing, and I want you to comment on it, helped you get over that hurdle. Mm-hmm. How did you do it? I mean, you basically were a student observing a guy, a genius.
He's a genius, yeah.
Yeah, observing a genius. But you really weren't observing his business practices, you know, on a day-to-day basis. So you come back to the U.S., you've launched this thing, you've got lots of people interested, now you got a responsibility to keep it operating. How did you do it? Financially, how did you do it?
So we're talking about Slow Food here?
Well, Slow Food and then Heritage, yeah.
Well, I mean, they were two people that I looked up to for my business sense. And this made my investors go crazy. And in fact, I told my co-author I wanted to include a chapter of this in the book. And he was like, no, people will think you're just crazy. In a weird way, I looked at Carlo Petrini and Alice Waters. They were two people who basically their life was paid for. You know, Slow Food and Chez Panisse, you know, Alice would travel. She would eat out. She would stay at hotels. American Airlines gave her free flights. I mean, she would stay at people's homes, you know, and same with Carlo, you know, but neither of them lived in a particularly big house. Carlo lived with his sister.
Right.
I mean, still to this day. And Alice lives in a little house right next to Chez Panisse. And it kind of was a very interesting thing, and anytime they would make money one year, they would reinvest it in a project.
Well, it was
almost like the concept of a break-even business that still paid people well and was very generous.
Right.
But in the end, I don't want to say its goal was to make zero, but it was almost built. Like, just when Heritage made money, we have a radio station.
Right.
Just when the radio is getting its feet, we're thinking of going into video, and it keeps parlaying stuff,
and
like
when
Ted Turner.
He went from
step to step to step.
Look, I thought about this as first as sort of a commodity exchange that's going on in your head. First, it was a commodity of ideas. Then it was a commodity of actual product. Then it was a commodity of media. I mean, there's a lot going on in that. You know, in that head on top of that orange shirt. There.
Just enough to make it not lose money. My investors said, we're going ballistic because of how you run things. And just when we think we're going to make a big, you know, return one year, you go and reinvest it. And I was like, well, can you stop it? And they're like, no, as long as you make so much as $1 at the end of a $7 million year, if $1 is made, you're fine. If $1 is lost, on the other hand, and I can always somehow get it to be a few $1,000 profit versus loss.
Let's talk about investors. Let's talk about investors.
Yeah.
How did you go out to hunt investors for Heritage Foods?
Well, I was very lucky. A lot of people knew me from Slow Food, and at this white wine event that we organized in the Puck Building, this guy came up to me and said, I want to invest in your new venture, Heritage Foods, which had already existed because the Slow Food Board made me start my own entity in order to sell the turkeys. And he was, a big believer. And I just didn't have my shit together, so I never really called him back. So every few months he would call me back and be like, we offered you 20 each. Now we want to offer you 30 each. He thought I was bidding against
You didn't have a good business lawyer in your pocket at that time?
No, not yet. I met that later. And by the way, my business lawyer adds a half hour of sleep to my night every night.
That's what a good lawyer should do.
Yeah, she's a friend and everything. Good. So anyway, I just kept waiting. And then these three guys finally each put in $60,000. And then there was a couple of friends from California. And one.
Did they ask for a business plan?
Oh, yes.
All right. So you created a business plan for this.
And they got, 20% of the business. And yeah, it did go through all that. But again, the instinct was to pay them back over time.
Mm-hmm.
I think the way the investors looked at it is this is a business that we can sell. And, I learned that from my wife. I'd never put it into words. I'm like, when you're 70, what are you going to be doing? She's like, I don't know, working at the cheese shop 2 days a week, much like I do now. I'm like, but wait, aren't you going to sell it? And she's like, I never built my business for a sale. And, part of the responsibility and baggage, even if I wanted it to be different, is that a lot of these farmers were on 5- and 10-year plans to raise these rare genetics to population counts that can service, restaurants like, Colicchio and Sons around the country and Vitali and Bastianich. So they were in it for 10 years. So it's very hard to just say, I'm going to pay everybody and then good luck.
No, you have look. An entrepreneur who creates a business has responsibilities that go well beyond himself or herself.
Other families that require that the money.
Exactly right. And again, as a business owner, that hits you in the face every day if you go to work every day. You watch other people, grind it out effectively, and you hope what you do is create a very fair environment so that everybody can have. Can have a life.
Yeah.
Can live a life. We're talking with Patrick Martins. We're talking about the business side of his idea shop that includes Slow Food USA, Heritage Foods USA, and the radio. Mm-hmm. So the radio, where the heck does that show up in from the back of your brain after mm-hmm. watching Carlo launch something that had power, right? Basically a platform for his ideas, right?
Yep, yep.
Is that what Heritage Radio started out as?
Well,
platform for your ideas?
On a very selfish level, you know, we would take out ads and, you know, well-intentioned magazines, you know, food magazines. I mean, I won't mention them by name. I mean, they were well-intentioned and they had nice, shiny pictures of peaches on the cover and stuff like that. And we would take out ads and say, oh, if you say this coupon number, we'll give you 20% off your turkey or 10% off your turkey. Mm-hmm. We wouldn't get one call.
Right.
And I was just like, God, and I'm sick of all these people coming with ideas. I want to control my in-house production, media, you know, self-promotion, PR. I don't want to pay a PR company. I'll pay people who work with me every day, who work as hard as me. Those are the people I want to invest in. So we pulled all of our funding from any type of art, magazine, PR, trying to get me on television, all this stuff. And we just put two shipping containers here at Roberta's. And we knew, you know, I forget who said it, Bill Clinton, I'm sure other people said it, all boats rise with the high tide. Like, let's get this off. Heritage Foods helped found it. That will benefit us. And we're going to get all the chefs that buy from us every single week, and they pay more than they have to for commodity foods to support us. We're going to get them on the air. We're going to promote them, and they can even do their own shows and stuff. And I think a lot of the chefs appreciated. At first, they were like, well, what the hell's our money going? He's launching a music station? And no, it's much more than that.
Yeah.
It's about in the business. It's about the farm report.
Yeah.
And getting the message out.
I mean, this is
converts.
This is not just, as a matter of fact, it's funny. I saw it written up as sort of a station for foodies. And I thought, boy, that's really not what it is. Mm. It's a station for people who have an interest in the industry and who have an interest in all different parts of the
industry. And I wrote down from your intro, Phil, you know, you were talking about how food isn't covered. I mean, there was an article in the Times today about how the agriculture lobby has lost total power in Washington because they can't even get a farm bill passed or get organized. So, I mean, that's an example.
No, and who's and then turn that on its head. Who turns out to be the leading voice for those farm bills? Turns out to be chefs.
Right.
Turns out to be chefs. Turns out to be Michelle Nashan. It turns out to be Tom Colicchio. It turns out to be, instead of this $1 billion industry.
Well, yeah, exactly.
That's supposed to be supporting farmers.
Well, the jury is so out, and I love how out it is, because the chefs, the Tom Colicchios and the Michelle Nashans of the world, they are really a powerful market force.
Yes.
I mean, they're powerful. They have their own television channels, The Chew. I mean, you go on and on. Top Chef. I mean, on and on. And it's helping bring serious issues around food. The other thing, you know, the Museum of Food and Drink, I'm trying to help launch that. That's also taking food seriously.
I'm in.
Yeah.
I'm in on that one. No, I'm in on that one.
Good.
Because, again, this is part of my business life.
Yeah.
Well, it's part of my business life. And I've never considered myself a foodie. I get to eat very well, just like you get to eat very well. We get to taste incredible things. You get to meet incredibly creative people.
Yeah.
And it's a very fulfilling component in my life, and I'm sure it is yours. But we were lamenting the lack of serious programming. You know, when Charlie Rose interviews a chef, I watch it, because Charlie Rose is actually, you know, peeling an onion there.
Anthropology, sociology, science,
but that's it. You know, one of the reasons that I agreed to do this show was because I said, only if I can talk about the business of this stuff.
And if everybody else would be like, oh, could you talk gossip about what Tom said? No, absolutely not. That stuff is way overdone. And we just think that a small percentage of programming needs to be dedicated towards the issues that are important to farmers, food, nutrition, you know, people like you and Marion Nestle. I mean, you know, these people should have columns in the food section. You shouldn't have to go to the business section to get a serious article about food.
No, I agree with you. I hope someone from the networks that the Food Channel and Bravo or any of the other networks that trade in food, listen, I just think that they'd get a heck of a lot of interest.
Couldn't
in a series. It would it'd get a lot. Look, the great thing about what's happened with the explosion of popularity of food and chefs is that there are people who now look at this a whole different way. It's very approachable now, and it's a great opportunity to educate. That was my point about chefs leading the charge on the Farm Bill.
And imagine if 500 chefs in New York City write a letter, co-sign a letter to the distributors in New York State or to, you know, Purdue or Smithfield. I mean, there's real power when you put 500 of the most famous American chefs. They're like massive celebrities, and they wield a tremendous amount of influence and power.
That'll get coverage. And you know what? One of my favorite little anecdotes is that even 15 years ago, you probably, most people couldn't name five chefs in the United States. Now, it is an absolute...
Who's who?
It's beyond a cottage industry. It's a mega industry. Well, Patrick, I like to end shows...
with a song.
Well, who's feeling young now usually kind of reels us in. But I like to end shows when I have interesting people, and I count you among the interesting people.
Thank you.
With takeaways for listeners. There are people who say, you know, I'm inspired by that guy. I'm inspired by what he does, or I'm inspired by the one of the ideas that he expressed. How can someone out there listening become Patrick Martins?
Well, it's a very interesting question. I think for my business hat, I would say one is to hell with recipes. Look to breed and how it was raised. If you have to look at the breed and how it was raised, you're automatically going to be helping my company or companies like mine,
right?
Which is good for business, because when you taste that food, also with wearing my business hat, every season has its meat. I think people understand that when it comes to tomatoes and strawberries, but they might not necessarily get that when it comes to naturally mating ducks and geese and turkeys and goats. And then on a personal level, other than right place at the right time, I could say, you know, think big and bring people with you. And in numbers and with strong people by your side, you want the strongest people next to you, not the weakest.
Right.
And when you get people, you know, like Aaron or Catherine, and I know you have those people in your life as well, you know, all boats rise, and that's a good thing.
Well, all boats do rise with the tide. I know that that my life has been enhanced and enriched through many of the things that you do. So I want to personally thank you for that. I also want to say thanks for taking the time and the effort to create the Heritage Radio Network, because I think it does excellent work. And as we can see from our beautiful studio, the air conditioning works today.
Thank God.
We're wearing brand new headphones that don't smell like a baby's diaper.
I'm sorry that my son Max took a poop. I can never hear the end of that one.
And, you know, I'd like to continue this conversation, but I think it probably will be continued over a beer and a little bit of pizza. What do you think?
Look forward to it.
Terrific. Patrick Martins, Slow Food USA, Heritage Foods USA. Give a plug, website.
HeritageFoodsUSA.com. Sign up to our weekly email. They're really well designed and fun to read.
They are. The website is actually pretty cool. I was fooling around with it today. I am here on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Phil Colicchio signing off for the business of the business. Happy 4th of July.
Happy Independence Day.
All right, everybody. See you next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @Heritage_Radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.